I'm your host, Rena Friedman-Watts, and this is the Better Call Daddy Show.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, Wayne Friedman.
That's my grandpa. Grandpa, you ready for more daddy drama?
My dad is my number one hero and number one fan.
And I'm a pretty cool dude.
All right, season four, baby, here we go.
More stories you're not going to believe.
And maybe you will after you listen.
5 stars.
5.5 stars, 2 thumbs up.
You are a pretty cool dude.
Love you, Mommy.
Don't stand on the table and damn the public. You'll get some words of wisdom to live by.
Here we go again. Better call Daddy.
You know what your problem is? You like me.
Yeah, I do. Each week, I interview a guest, share the stories with my dad, and then he weighs in at the end of every episode with his wisdom and wit.
Hey, Grandpa.
Everyone from influential players to inspirational fathers and, of course, controversial people.
Grandpa, my mom is calling.
Creating that legacy one call at a time. And welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
Stay tuned.
Where's the music?
Better call Daddy because he knows you best. Better call Daddy because he's bringing the test. He sees possibilities. Better call Daddy, you're the apple of his eye. He sees possibilities. All to be.
Every day we wake up is an achievement. Today, we're going to talk about not over-encouraging or over-congratulating people. I'm getting some advice from another mama. She goes by Mama D from the Petals of Support podcast. She's going to talk about her upbringing, her parenting style, and a little bit about podcasting. Mama D, welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
I am super excited to get some mommy advice from a mommy.
Oh, we'll see what we come up with today. Huh? You had some great ideas. I'm just curious, what made you think about like going with the DNA, like roots and, you know, where do you come up with that?
So I just feel like in my middle life and in interviewing so many people, it's interesting that I feel like people want to know where they came from. And so I want to know where Mama D comes from. So I just phrased it as, have you found anything out about your DNA? But I more meant, have you found anything about your roots and where you come from, what you believe? I know you're all about reevaluating your beliefs.
Yeah. Because they change so many times. So I don't think we realize that perspective changes. And that's, I've heard people say, you know, she's not who she was when I knew her in high school. Well, yeah, I shouldn't be, because then that means I stopped growing in high school and went through life and didn't like absorb any of the situations around me. Why would somebody want that? Maybe I was nicer in high school. But I mean, could that be because, not that I've had bad things happen to me, don't get me wrong, but you know, you kind of start having, you're not going to push me over, or I have hard lines that I'm not going to let somebody cross, that in high school, I didn't know to establish those boundaries. So, I mean, yeah, maybe I'm not as nice, but does nice just mean I'm not a pushover? But I don't want to deal with somebody who stopped growing in high school. I mean, what a pain that would be. You know, I mean, I'm 46-year-old adult dealing with someone with like an, you know, a 16-year-old mentality. That's not what we want when we're adults. So I think it's a great question on, you know, why do we grow and all that kind of, it's good. You come up with good stuff.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought up boundaries. I actually listened to your solo episode on boundaries. Do you still remember those 5 boundaries? I wrote them down. I would love to dive into those. Physical, emotional,
property.
Sexual, material, and time.
Time. Yes. Yes. I had never thought necessarily about the material, but I do have, we all should have boundaries with that. And even time. Time is mine. That's the boundary I'm not great with. And I don't know if that's, I mean, I could blame it on being a mom. And maybe to some degree it is, because we find ourselves donating all of our time to our children, as we should, especially when they're little. But when they get older, sometimes we, and I'm totally guilty of not being able to say, you know, you can do that on your own. You know, I'm a very big, oh, you want my help. You know, you're talking to me. That's good. You know, there's sometimes we don't want to talk to me, you know? So when they come to me, I will. Or with friends, I'm very, when do you want to do it? You know, what can I do? And as I've gotten older, I've gotten better at saying, you know what? I'm running myself ragged, or, you know, I'm staying up until 1 a.m. doing laundry, my responsibilities, because I did things that I didn't need to do, but I felt like I don't have a great way of saying no to people, but I'm getting better at that. So and yeah, the sexual one makes, you know, but pretty clear. And, you know, some of the other ones are a little bit clearer, you know, what's my hard no, but, you know, yeah, it was a, and I know that there's a lot more because I did do research after. I'm like, there's a lot, but I kind of like the five, you know?
Yeah. Have you talked to your kids about sex? Did your parents talk to you about sex and boundaries?
My parents did not. And I'm not sure. I mean, I do have this memory of before, you know, you was fifth grade, you had the talk in school, which was basically just, this is what a period is. People are going to start having them. I don't even know what the boys talked about. But it was, you know, just that kind of, it was nothing necessarily sex. It was just, this is what your body's supposedly going to do. And of course, you're sitting around knowing that some of your friends had already, even before fifth grade started, there's a couple girls. Then I don't remember walking away feeling like totally like safe. I guess the word be, it was too many unanswered questions, but it was not meant to be question time, at least back then. I hope it's gotten better since then. But I remember going home, my mom had a book. And it's important to say that, you know, this was back when you could get tampons. You could get the, you know, pads with the sticky on the back that fit on your pant, like the modern stuff you get now. My mom had bought me a belt, one of the belts with the clips. Now, when, I don't know, but she brought that thing in. I remember being like, what? That wasn't what they show us in class. And then my mom had a hysterectomy very young. So she really hadn't dealt with any of that. But I'm like, you go to the grocery store, lady, you know, don't you notice that these things don't look like that anymore? So I remember that's a huge memory where she pulls out this belt and it was pink. I'll never forget. And she's going to talk, talking about these straps. And I'm like, what? No, I want the sticky on the, you know, that's what I want. But when it comes to my boys, I don't know. We just have a very open relationship. Now, they are not going to sit down at the dinner table and ask me something. It's not like that. They have a way. They're good. They wait till we were driving places. So my focus was on the road. And then they would blurt out some random question. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it's normal. I don't have that part. So I don't know if it does that. But, you know, and then I would always think, why are you not asking your dad? I mean, he's a great guy. Why? And it was just mom, as long as mom didn't look at them. So I would drive down the road going, oh, mom, you know, like, I don't, ew, you know, but it allowed me, because I think because I never made a face, I never responded in anything other than, I don't know, well, let's look it up. Or oddly enough, that happened to your brother. And I remember having this conversation. So A, it's normal. So that should help you feel better. And B, let's figure out how to Google it safely, because some of those are keywords we don't want to be plugging in people's phones. You know, who knows what's going to pop up? We don't need those videos. So it's a different relationship I have. Oh, and it's taken time and work. But we talk about who they date. And a lot of it is said, at least on my end, we joke a lot. So I'll make comments about, she's a great girl, but I don't really want her to be your baby mama. Let's not have baby mamas. Or, you know, I'm done. You know, if you give me another child that I need to raise because you're not ready, I'm going to create the most annoying child known to man and then give it back to you. Because I've, you know, I can do it. Don't think I can't. And they're always like, okay, yeah, we don't want her raising our kids, you know. But I find that it's all about the communication. I think I did lack that with my parents. But I want to know if it was the time. It just wasn't as, because my friends talk to their kids about things too. It's not like I've got this weird family or something. It's just, I think, a little bit more like it's okay to talk to your parents, at least here. in my family, my friends. I don't know. Maybe it's not like that everywhere.
I definitely did not talk to my parents about sex. And in fact, when I interviewed the host of How to Build a Sex Room with my dad, it was quite a funny conversation.
Oh, yeah, that would be, yeah. I could imagine my dad and I, it would be, whoa. I get a lecture afterwards because in my dad's mind, I will always be 12, which I mean, I get. And I could say, I mean, with my kids, my oldest is 21. You know, he will always be 10. I still will tell him things that I'm like, I know I don't need to tell you this, but put your stuff away or do this, or this is how you should talk to someone. Or, you know, we're talking about, you know, stuff with school and I feel like I have to spell things out. And then I'll stop and remind myself, he's 21. He knows. I did a good job. He knows what he's doing. But it's hard not to be like, you know, see that little face with the curly hair eating dinner with me and realize that that's not who he is anymore. He's a man, kind of.
Isn't it sweet, though, when sometimes they're sitting a certain way or doing something that reminds you of when they're little and you're like, you look like a 2-year-old right now. I just love you. Don't move.
Yes. Yeah. And so when they're sleeping, you know, and I'll like put something away, I'll creep in their room or something because I need to grab something from, because this is my oldest son's room when he's home. So sometimes I'll have to sneak in here. And he's just like all snuggled up in his bed. And I'm like, oh my gosh. He will always be my baby. It's just what it is. But I think that he's doing well. That's what matters. He's doing well.
Talk to me about rules and expectations in your home growing up. Were there any?
Yes. And I'll say that you're talking about how things affect us later. In my house, I was the one to get the grades. That was my job. I think I tried kind of sports, but believe it or not, not very athletic, not athletic at all. And they didn't push it, which, to be honest, I wish they had. Because how do you, at 5 or 6, your clumsy little thing running around out there, maybe I needed more time because I think I would have enjoyed it. But everything they pushed me, and they, I will say pushed, was single, you know, a solo thing. Like, you know, I played the piano forever. Even dance, they were not group lessons. They were more of just like private lessons for ballet or anything. But it was never pushing it farther than that because my whole job was grades. I did not have to work. They paid for everything as long as I kept the grades up with the expectation that I was going to college. I could go whatever college I wanted to go to. That's where I could go. I could study whatever I wanted, but I was going to college. And the grades were what was important. My brother, on the other hand, it was athletics. And I'm not sure if that was something he expressed an interest in early on. So they kind of latched onto it. He's smart. I mean, my brother's extremely smart, but they never focused on the grades like they did with me. And my brother was very athletic. He played 3 sports. Very good. He did potentially have a scholarship to go somewhere and play soccer. But by that point in his life, he was so burnt out because he was getting so good at soccer. They were traveling him all over the place. And that does help your skills. But for some people, I think it burned him out. So he was like, I'm just going to go to college and I just want to join a fraternity and I just want to live my life and not have such a structure, which is fine. But what I realized, and I have thought about many times, is that they would go and cheer him on. My dad coached my brother's quite a few of the different teams he was on, especially, you know, when he was a little early on. But every game, every tournament, every award ceremony, they were there. They never went to anything for me. And we've gone through some phases. Believe it or not, Mama D can have a big attitude problem. And I was not the lovely teenager that I look back and wish I was. I had a mouth. And I was going to tell you, if I was upset, you knew why. I was going to tell you, whether I was right or wrong, you were going to know my feelings on it. And maybe that's why I'm so big on feelings. But one time I brought that up to both of them and I was mad about who knows what. And that I felt unseen because a grade is a piece of, you know, back then you didn't even look it up on a computer. It was simply a piece of paper you brought home. I mean, you weren't even bringing home test grades. So, you know, this was, I'm old. This was back in that day. And it was a piece of paper. And I cannot for the life of me remember that we did anything special when I brought home. And I'm not kidding. I was straight A's. I was straight A's. I earned a full ride scholarship to the college I went to. I was in the honors program. I did everything, but I don't feel like I was ever seen. Now, did it set me up in my future? Oh, heck yeah, it did. I mean, I had no debt when I graduated college. And that was what I created. And that was because of them pushing the importance of it. But I did not feel seen. So I yelled at them about it. And my dad, who, lovely man, said, well, what do you want me to do? Come cheer you on every test you took? And I realized that in a way he was right. You can't come to my physics exam in the background yelling, you know, go, you know, Mama D, even that wasn't Mama D, you know, go Mama D. But you can do that for my brother who is playing in a basketball game. So I get that they couldn't do it, but I still, I think, look back and think they could have done things to let me know that I was seen. It wasn't necessarily needing praise, even though when I was in sixth grade, I probably did. I needed praise. I needed to feel like I was doing it right. You know, hearing it from your teachers, all of that was wonderful. But I don't remember now at 46 that that really mattered to me. I would have remembered if my parents had said, you know, this was your, you know, look what you got in the ACTs. Let's take you out to eat. Or, you know, this is what you got in the SATs. Let's do, look at all the colleges you got accepted into. Let us do, and they didn't do that. But also when I was doing that, my brother was in high school and he's making varsity this and varsity this and killing it. So I think I saw the expectations as not equal. Did they probably benefit me? Yes, because of what I was able to do with myself. But, you know, then of course I quit working, stay-at-home mom. So, you know, way to a college education, but, you know, it's okay. But the expectations were definitely there and they were strong, but they definitely weren't equal.
That's super interesting. And I think it's a really good point as a mom of four to think about praising our children. Mm-hmm. And do you try to praise your children because you didn't get that praise?
Oh, see, that is where we dive into. If you ask my boys, I am probably, you know, psychotic level cheerleader. And what it has done is, oddly enough, I have one child, my youngest, who he thinks he can walk on water. He goes into every situation, not as a cocky little anything, but he has no self-doubt. If he wants to achieve the highest score, he is competitive as all get-go. He's going to achieve it. I always joke that when he's going to eventually, you know, go into a career world, and for example, he's one of those ones who would walk into a business, walk in the door for the interview and be like, this is where I'm working. In 5 years, you're going to work for me. So keep that in mind. And they're going to hire him and they're going to love him because he is going to achieve every single goal he sets. That's who he is. He is a force. But the odd one is then you have my oldest who has low self-confidence, who you need to constantly, I mean, he'll come to me with something he has written and it's beautifully written. He has skill in writing. I wish he looked more into that, but he didn't. Maybe he will with marketing, but he needs constant reassurance. And I find it so funny because he'll get a great job and they will hire him because he is the kindest, sweetest person. And people will love him and they will promote him because he does his job. You ask him to do it, he does it. He doesn't question a lot. He doesn't complain. People like to be around him because he's just so kind. And he'll eventually run that company, but for totally different reasons than the oldest, who is like, you know, now we're going to take over a country and then the world, you know, and that's going to be, you know, we're all going to be working for my youngest one day. But I find it strange that, but I've talked to them about it. And what my oldest said once, we were at a soccer game. He was playing an indoor game. It was just a rec game. And I had gone to watch. And in the process, it wasn't the best game. And we're in the car. And I said, you know, in typical me, I'm like, you did so well. You had school all day. Here we come to this. You didn't look exhausted. You played the whole game. They kept you in. You did this and did that. I mean, he hadn't scored. But when he looked at me, he's like, Mom, I could literally shoot the ball at the wrong goal, ricochet off four of my own teammates, knock myself out, and he carried off. And you would look at me and be like, you did so well. I said, well, you kicked the ball, didn't you? I mean, like, that's how I look at things. He's like, I can't trust your judgment. And I thought that's an interesting, now that he's gotten older, he can say that. Because you praise everything I do, how much credit do I give that? Again, he can be an insightful little, you know, thing when he wants to. And I thought, you know, you're right. Overly praising can be a problem too. But that is who I am. And it's hard for me to turn that off. Even if I have to say, our joke is you're the handsomest schmoopy out there. I'm like, you know, he's out there on the team. He's the most handsome one out there. And people are like, that's not really how it works. I'm like, oh, but it is. He, look at how beautiful he is, you know. I can find a positive in pretty much anything. But I realize that that can be a detriment for some things.
It's interesting to think about that from both sides, where praise can lead to a kid having no self-doubt. But then on the flip side, how can we trust your praise?
Right, right.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, I get it. If you constantly told me that every one of my podcast episodes was awesome, the most amazing message, my audio crystal clear, and then I put out one that even I know was not good for whatever reason. Maybe I kept dropping stuff. Maybe I couldn't edit it right. Maybe, but I put it out anyway because, you know, it was worth going out. And you're still telling me how great it is. I could see how I'd be like, you told me that this was awesome, but you told me this was how they're totally different. I can recognize that. So I get where he's coming from. I tell him he's wrong, but you know, I get where he's coming from.
I also am interested in the work that you ended up doing for 8 years. You worked with foster care children.
Yes. I worked with special treatment foster care kids. So I worked for a nonprofit organization that the county, and it's very important, the county were the ones that were, for various reasons, removing kids from the biological home. And then they needed, of course, a foster home to put them in. So most kids, we'll just use air quotes, even though no one can see us, a typical foster home. Our foster homes, we required our parents to have more training because our kids could not function in a typical foster home. I blame the biological parents because at least in the clients I had, and I worked with clients for 6 years. 2 years afterwards, when I was not working, I was working as kind of like a transcriber for that place because I knew everyone. I knew the terms. We tried that for a couple years. It ended up being a little overwhelming, and then things kind of, technology caught up. But all of my clients, if you really traced back what the start of problems were, it was the biological parents, or at least some sort of environmental situation that then led to often mental illness. And as usually, you know, mental illness, there's not just one. They come in little groups. And then, unfortunately, medication for mental illness can lead to other problems. So all of my kids were on something for some reason. So these were foster parents who realized, you know, I'm not just giving you a kid that you make sure their needs are met. They're going to go to regular school. They're going to, you know, maybe they'll have visits with their bio parents. My kids rarely, if ever, saw their biological parents. They were gone, and thank the good Lord they were gone. But these were kids who you are looking at. You are going to be going to a lot of appointments. They're going to need to see their psychologist as well as a psychiatrist, as well as who knows who, on at least a weekly basis. You are going to be giving out medication because you cannot give this. That would be so bad. You know, here, take these. They're not taking crap. So then you're going to be fighting with people who have a lot of anger issues. We're not talking of quote unquote typical. I worked with the teenagers. So typical teenagers who have their own. I mean, you're an emotional person. That's a tough time in life. Now you're adding kids who have abandonment issues, which is going to lead to a whole lot of anger. And it's misplaced anger because they can't focus. Sometimes they don't even understand why they're dealing with what they're dealing with, or they can't get to the people who did it to them. And then the saddest thing that when you realize is that these kids still love their biological parents, especially if they had any sort of life with them before they were taken away. So now you're keeping them from their parents. So they hate you anyway. So there's just a lot going on. And then you're going to be going to school to pick them up. They're going to have days. So our parents were trained extra. Therefore, they got paid extra. And so you always had those parents who saw it as money and did not necessarily understand and skirted by with the bare minimum of what they could do and still get that paycheck. And we're not talking. It was like thousands. It was not. But it was more than you would get if you worked for your county. And we would get kids from all over the state I live in, because you would not want to put a kid, if you took a kid out of your town and their biological parents were in that town, you want to move them somewhere else so biological parents, if they're trying to do something, cannot become a problem. And so, you know, we had them from all over, if that all makes sense.
How did you end up in that line of work?
I knew that I wanted to go into psychology. I had every intention of going all the way. I wanted to be Dr. Miss Momady. I wanted the whole thing. And I knew that I needed, after I was done with the 4 years, back then, you know, this was 20 some years ago, requirements change, certifications change. I was able to get things that nowadays would require a lot more education. And honestly, rightfully so. They should not have just been allowing us to take a test and get a certification that allowed us to do things that, truthfully, more book education would have been helpful, but I learned it on the job, which is not necessarily a bad thing either. But when I graduated from college, I was like, I need something. So this was back in the day, there was no LinkedIn. There was no, you know, you're opening up a paper and you're looking for jobs, and then you're sending out a resume that you've printed off on your mom and dad's printer, and you're hoping for interviews. And I applied to several places, but this one, I don't know. I just walked in the door and the staff were wonderful, and they became some of my best friends. Some of them were in my wedding. You have to be a team, because you, no day is the same. No client is the same. No crap the client does is going to be the same twice. So you need that group of people that you can go into a meeting or call a meeting and say, this is what's going down. I've tried A, B, and C. What's another option? And I had this great group behind me. So I didn't leave. I just kept going with it. And the degree was, you know, of course, helpful, but a lot of it was on the job. I mean, you have to know what, at least how to use at the time, the DSM-4. You have to know when somebody comes to you and says, this is their diagnosis. You have to know basically what that means. But most of my training, of course, was on the job, which is how a lot of jobs are.
Speaking of on the job, you visited kids in jail, right?
Yes. Yes. It would be more of a juvenile detention, because my kids, I had the teenagers, so they did some dumb stuff. And we did our best, because we knew putting them in a juvenile detention center was not benefiting anyone. A lot of them were going to teach the other kids some things that they didn't need to know. And then our kids came out with things going on. We could not. I mean, now we're not even at square one anymore. We're back farther because we got some more trauma that we are trying to deal with. But I would go in, if that's where they were, that's where I was visiting them. And it was devastating, because if we couldn't, and this was our job to try to help these kids through things, try to help them set up a plan for a future that did not involve help. I wanted my kids independent, and I did whatever I could to achieve that. Well, in a juvenile detention center, that's not what they're worth. They got a lot going on. I don't fault people who work there. I don't say they did this or this wrong. The system makes it
very difficult because I had at one time like 30 kids in my caseload. What the hell can you do with 30 kids? All I'm doing is I was able to smart enough to sometimes, you know, this foster home can take four kids. I put four of my kids there because then I could visit four of my kids at the same time. But I'm not giving all four of those kids the time that they deserve. But I had other kids and I'm dealing with their emergencies and I have to sleep. So it was, I can't imagine, like I never, you know, worked in a juvenile detention center. I didn't really know anyone. You knew people where you'd walk in, they'd see you and let you in and everything. And then I did visit, I had one that went to prison. They very rarely, like very rarely reached out to you after they left the system. They were, you know, like peace out, they were gone. They hated everybody. Even if you set them up the best you could and you had a good relationship, they did not want anything to do with you and anything to do with anything. And I had one who went to prison for murder and, oh, he did. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sitting there like I could have told you that he had all these anger issues. And we knew as soon as he left, he wasn't taking medication. He was going to go out on that street and he was going to find the drugs that or what killed his mom. And you know, we knew, but there's nothing. It's sad that you build this relationship and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, we warn people. He's 18. He wouldn't get his GED. He wouldn't go to high school anymore. He was 18. He was done. And that is what it is. Because you always, I guess, have that hope. Well, it's a space. There's a 9-year-old that needs that space. That is what it is. I regret not being able to do more, but I look back and think I couldn't have. We can't. We do the best we can, but it doesn't mean I don't feel horrible for failing so many of these kids because I did. But I don't know if I could have done more. I really wish I could have, but I don't know if I could have.
Interesting. Wow. What was it like walking into the juvenile detention center like the first time? I mean, do you remember those experiences?
See, and I don't. I always remember that it was just one of those. It became normal. It's like court. It was like all of it. That was so long ago. And I'm sure I was scared. How could you not be? But it became where you, because, you know, these kids, sometimes they were put there for just a couple weeks, but it was usually longer term. And again, that didn't take them off my caseload because in theory, they had to keep a foster home because all of a sudden, sometimes you get a phone call and be like, yeah, they've released so-and-so that you need to pick them up and take them home. And I'm like, awesome, warning. But they didn't. They'd be like, he's released, go get him. So I had to keep these foster homes a space open. So those parents were getting paid to keep a space open. And again, I had wonderful foster parents because you kind of start wheedle out and you get, you know, you've decided who you work well with. So that's where I kept putting my kids. So I could say nothing negative about those people. But I think that you just reached a point where that's just where I would go once, twice, three times a week for so long. And you just walked in and the staff were always very nice. They would set us up. Usually it was very well monitored. And they knew that these were kids. This is, I'm sure, a lot of the people there had some sort of mental illness or they were suffering through some trauma that was a root of something else. But what do? You know, they don't have people on staff that can necessarily work the one-on-one that people need when they've had such a horrible situation growing up or trauma that was defining their life at that point.
Was mental illness or trauma at all discussed in your home?
No, and that's one thing I have loved about changes that you hear about nowadays. And I say, you know, you hear about because, you know, I mean, older here. But I can remember that there were the kids in school who were the bad kids. Now, what does the bad kid mean? Who knows? I mean, they were kids who didn't do their homework or whatever it was, but they were put in special classes and they were bad. Maybe some of them had some anger problems. Maybe as mental as it was more like oppositional defiant. They could have been stuff like that, but do not tell me I did not go to school with kids who were autistic, who were maybe suffering through some pretty severe depression, but nobody talked about it. They were the bad kids. And we didn't talk about it in my home. I cannot remember we talked feelings. I mean, kind of in the general being upset about something, anger. Yeah, I was a pro with the anger. You know, I would show you that. But it was not something that was discussed like I think it is now. Like, I do mental health checks with my kids. And it could just be in a 1 to 10. Where, what are we doing? How are we doing right now? It's exam week. 1 to 10. Well, what do we have going on? And depending on how they answer, depends on what we do next. But I'm not licensed anymore. I do not have any of that. I'm just a mom. But these are things I learned, that sometimes just saying mental health check, or, you know, 1 to 10, how are you doing? We do it when our kids are sick. My youngest had asthma growing. He still has asthma. But he was in and out of the hospital quite often. And that was something they do in the hospital, is the 1 to 10 scale, the 1 to 5. And it got to the point where my kid would just, someone would walk in the room, he'd be like, I'm an 8. Okay, I'm an 8. Like, and he's really mad at you right now. But why not just change it to on a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 or whatever you're comfortable doing, where are you? Because then it makes them take a moment and think, where am I? And they see also that I'm going to react to it. If, you know, 10 is awesome in our house, so 10 is great. So if I walk in and if they say 10, I'm like, come on, dude. Like, I mean, you're knee deep in homework right now. We know you're not a 10. What are you really? And he'll be like, okay, look, I'm an 8. I'm like, well, that's cool. If you get higher, let me know. But if I walk in and they say 3, they know we're going to talk about it. And it's not going to be a lecture. It's just going to be like, okay, you're a 3. Why? What can we do? What can I do? Maybe we just need to leave. Let's go to Dairy Queen. Sometimes just putting the books down or walking away from the person or the situation or the sport, sometimes it just, that helps. So you're a 3. Let's go figure it out. We don't have to talk about it. I've learned that, at least with my boys, I'm not going to say boys in general, or because, you know, who knows? Everybody's different. I don't have to say any. If I just drive and sit there quietly, they will eventually talk to me. And that's how we work. But that's my kids. Everybody's different.
I love that. I think today when my kids come home from school and basketball practices and all that they've got going on, I'll just be like, hey, how was your day? 1 to 10.
Yeah. And if you don't do it too excessively, like they do at a hospital, they're more willing to work with you. But I still remember like an 8, you know, and you're kind of waiting for them to like throw like an, you know, like an angry old man throw something at a door, you know. But that kid, he was in the hospital a lot. So I think he had reached that. I don't want to talk to you guys. Just make it better. Let me go home. But
that's great. That's great. I think that's also a good way of helping your kids feel seen, which is something that you wanted as a kid. And I also want to go into your podcast and how you team up with a bunch of podcasters. It has been so fun. I heard you on the Stupid History Minute. I wanted to know why you picked Binkies. Was that a subject that he gave you? Or
he gave me that. He gave me that. And I laugh because I'm going to do it again. And I think he said January. I've already recorded it. But, you know, he'd asked us, a few of us back, I think it was May. I can't remember when it was. He's like, I want to do a guest one. And, you know, Kev and I have been friends for a while. So he's like, will you do? I said, sure. And I think he was trying to tie it into mothers and Binkies. But he types it up for you. And I do solos. I mean, I do guests. Don't get me wrong. But I do solos. I don't do an outline. I do not type anything out. I just talk. Really with anything, I might take notes, but I just talk. So reading a script was going to be interesting. But I swear that man put in words that would tongue-tie. One of the ones was orthodontic. There's orthodontic Binkies, pacifiers. I did not know that. For some reason, I could not say orthodontic. I said orthopedic. I said all sorts of ones. And so I had to keep rewinding, you know, like, so I'm scrapping that. I mean, I use Audacity. I edit. So I'd be like, oh, pause. So by the end, it was losing my temper. And I finally said it. And once you say it once, you get better. But, you know, I appreciated getting that opportunity to do that. So I sent him that one. And then this one, he let us pick for January what our topic was going to be. So I picked one. It's a secret. And he sent me the script and I read it. But again, I sent him a text. I'm like, did you write something and then use a thesaurus to find out what is the most difficult word we can put in this sentence? because I was stumbling all over the place. I'm like, English is my first language. I'm good at it. You know, I know how to speak it. I could not. It took forever, but it's fun. I mean, it's fun hearing the history of things. I love his Stupid History Minute. It's a great podcast.
Yeah, it is a great podcast. And I actually have one coming soon, too.
Yay! I thought he had mentioned that he had a wonderful list, and I was hoping that you were on that list. So, yay. Did you get to pick your topic, I assume, too?
Yes, I picked my topic. So, I'm excited that he hadn't done it out of 500 or so minutes that he's done.
I know. That was the one where I told him, like, this is what I want to do. I said, it's something I like. And then I said, also, I wasn't sure if it even, everything has a history. I don't know how hard this will be for you to like research, because it's kind of just an out there thing. And he's like, no, I've never done. He's like, I don't even know what that is. I'm like, how could you not know what this is? But then I sent him pictures. I'm like, these are the ones that I own. And he's like, oh, okay. But he typed something up. So who knows where he gets all of his topics, but it's definitely, it's one of those ones that if you just want to hit play, an hour would be, because they're about a minute, you know, 60 different little tidbits of history and gems of information. You can then sound really cool when you're talking to someone. Just drop that, you know, you want to know the history of a paperclip, and then you can just tell them. So no, it's a cool one. I highly recommend Keb's podcasts.
Yes. And I heard even at the tail end of your podcast that you played a promo for his podcast, which I think is really cool. And I wanted to talk about a little bit of switching things up in your podcast and trying new things. So I saw on Twitter, Pods Like Us had done a tweet where it said, hey, I'm looking for people to do bumpers for our show. Just say your name, the name of your show, mm-hmm. and then the introduction to my show. And I was like, oh, I should totally have like some creators do that on my show. Like I've been running the same beginning for a long time. And it's another way to promote other podcasters and switch things up. And then I was like, wait, do I need to drop music under that? Do I need to put like reverb on it? Or can I just get a quick, hey, yeah. you know, I had this idea and I'm going to try it. So I didn't even put music under it. I didn't make an echo effect. Somebody just said their name, what they do on their podcast, and then listen to my podcast because everybody needs to call their dad, or, you know, like something yeah. fun like that.
Oh, I love it. People are so creative, because I do the same intro. And it's funny because one time I was like, I'm going to change it because mine is hello and welcome to Petals of Support. This is Mama D. And then I go into the topic. I'm like, no, I'm going to switch it up. Wouldn't you know, I hit record and what comes out of my mouth, but that exact sit. And I'm like, so next time, and I guess I had, it's like, you know, I have it ingrained. As soon as I hit record, that is what I say. So I kind of like that maybe that would get me out of that routine because I would use this instead. So what a people are creative. They truly are.
Yeah. And that too is why I love collaborating with other creators, other podcasters, people that are just starting and have ideas mm-hmm. and they're all like gung ho, or people that have been doing it for 13 years and, yeah. and they're looking to switch things up, maybe rebrand. I think it's important to talk to people at all stages of the game because everybody is discovering different things.
It is. And it's funny because I go back to some Facebook podcast beginner groups because I used those. So I was, as soon as I kind of didn't consider myself a beginner anymore, I thought, well, do I leave those groups? And I thought, no, because people didn't leave. And that is the people who gave me those little bits of advice. So I stay and I see, it's kind of fun to see, well, I was back there one day and I never give advice about anything technology because I don't have it. The reason why I can do what I do is truthfully because other people helped me and taught me, and you know, I don't veer off. You know, when I use Audacity, I'm like, these are the effects I use. This is how you use them. You know, every once in a while, I'm like, ooh, I'm going to fade in. And then I think I'm really cool because I'm like, okay, I hit the button, you know, and it faded my music. But when it comes to topics, when it comes to how to find guests, or when it comes to anything, then I can give advice. But you're right. Even now, I still learn things. Like I took, over the summer, I took a month and a half off. Just oldest was going to be going back to college, so I wanted to soak up as much time as I could with him. Youngest was going to be starting high school again. It was just one of those, you know what? I just don't want to have to worry about not just recording an episode, but promos and promoting it and just everything. So I'm like, I'm going to take a month and a half off. So I do belong to the Unfiltered Studio Network, which is, I just love them. The core group, we have been friends for a while. And we've added some people. That's, you know, what a network does. But I trust them. So of course, it was Keb. We were, you know, talking, and I said, yeah, I'm going to take a month and a half off. He's like, oh, cool. And he's like, well, you know, if you take more than a week or two, you really ought to stay relevant, re-air some of your old episodes. He's like, go find some. He's like, you know, maybe you can fix them up if you want to. But to be honest, add a little thing at the beginning saying, I am on a break until this time. Please enjoy this episode. It's one of my favorites. And then just put it out there. And I thought, I'd never thought of that. I literally was just going to say bye and just take a month and a half off. He's like, you don't have to promote it. You don't have to do any of that stuff. But at least on somebody's feed where they have subscribed to you, you pop up. They don't forget you. You don't disappear. And I thought, you know what? That is excellent advice. And I've passed that on to people and said, I wouldn't have thought of that. I just was really like, everybody takes breaks. Just take a break. But how easy it was to simply just re-air some episodes. Didn't take me very long to put it all together. So we can teach each other things. And that's the benefit. Not necessarily, you know, of course, I love my network. And if you're looking for a network, it is a great one to belong to. But if you're not into that, join the Facebook groups. Join the Twitter groups. Find these friends. Even if they don't end up being people who listen to your podcast, it's just not their thing. That's okay. You can still help each other out when it comes to promoting or just answering questions. I mean, there's some podcasts that I interact with, I don't listen to. I'm sure they're wonderful, but they're not my style. I'm not big into sports. I'm not. I can't listen to a podcast that's about sports except for Keb and Biebs have one now. And they're like, well, hey, tell you this, we're going to do a sports one. I'm like, why would you do that to me? They're like, there'll be gossip. And I'm like, okay, there's going to be some gossip and drama. I will listen to it. But I don't willingly listen to other sports ones. But that doesn't mean I can't promote you because I have friends who might. It doesn't mean I can't be on board and your cheerleader. It just means, to be honest, I just don't find an interest in football. I just don't. That's okay. Everybody's got their own thing, but I can still support you.
I love that. And I think my dad will love that too. And to be honest, the premise of this show is to give encouragement to others. And I feel like our podcasts have that similar theme, is yes, that you want to give advice and support to others. And, you know, my dad has been my chief encourager. And I thought that other people could use his wisdom and encouragement too. So
I think we forget because we know how we grew up and we know how those around us grew up. That's not the norm. It's the norm for you. And that's whether good or bad. That is your norm. It's not the norm for everyone. And that's why, at least with mine, I thought not everyone has a mom around. Not everyone has a parent who gave the same advice or gave advice. So I can fill that little void. And then when people come online, they're giving me advice. And I'm like, I didn't know that. So I think that there's a lot of the advice giving, support giving ones. And I think they're important. Like, I love that you offer up your dad. You're letting your dad be all of our dads for a little bit. Because not everybody had a dad who was around or who maybe talked a lot or shared a lot. So it's so nice to think, even, it doesn't matter how old you are. You could be young or you could be older. To hit play and just hear some advice is just helpful, I think.
Do you have any questions for my dad?
Oh, I would just love to hear your dad's thoughts on what I shared about the support. Because rah-rah cheerleader, gung-ho, 100%, kind of psychotic about it. I will admit that. Like, I would have worn shirts that said my kid's name and mom underneath it. They wouldn't let me. They were just like, we let you drive us to things. We let you sing from point A to point B. And, oh, you know, you want to talk about Eye of a Tiger? That is how I'm like, you seem quiet back there. Let us ramp you up. I can sing word for word, not on key. Does not matter. This is
a 30-minute car ride featuring me as lead singer, guitarist, bassist. I'm covering all of it. And you're going to sit there and be amped up. But I look back now and think, I see where they're coming from. So I would love to hear, is that a common thing? Do parents who are, especially as you said, your dad's a cheerleader, did he think of that? Because I didn't. I didn't think that this could actually work against my kids in a way. Like, I could have dialed it back a little bit. Knowing my personality, it wouldn't have been much, but I could have dialed it back a little bit. I'd love to hear his thoughts on that, because I was, I'm not going to say wrong, I did my best. But if I can help somebody else realize that there is a detriment to being too cheerleadery, and that is now a word, cheerleadery. But if I can help somebody else, maybe your dad has some thoughts too that I'd love to hear. Because my kids aren't grown. I mean, they're grown up and we're not done yet. So if he has advice on what I could do, how I could say things maybe different, I would appreciate that.
Mama D, I love that question. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I was like, did I explain that well? Sometimes I'm just like tangent and off I go. So I'm glad I did.
Yes. And let people know how they can cheerlead for you.
Oh, everyone is always welcome. You can find me on, well, I'm available on all of the podcast listening ways. It's Petals of Support. It is bi-weekly. Tuesdays and Thursdays are when my episodes come out. I have just finished a very long, I call them sleepovers. They are when I have guests. They're a little bit longer and they end up being a two-parter because we record for an hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes. And the last series I did was on goals and dreams and journeys and how you, even if you didn't achieve it or haven't achieved it yet, what was your journey? Because I think that is way more important and way more motivating than just everybody always achieving things. How did you do it? Did you stumble? How'd you get back up? But those are going to be done. We're now going on to solos, which is how I started this whole thing. So solos are just me giving advice, advice that I give my kids, advice that I give my friends and family. They are under 20 minutes, so they are just right. If you need something to get ready in the morning or on a drive home from work, if you have any questions or you have topics you'd like me to cover, I'm always looking for something that would help somebody. I'm on X, Threads, TikTok, and Instagram at Petals of Support. Or you can email me at petals.s@aol.com.
Amazing.
You've heard from my mom. Now, let's switch it over to Grandpa.
We usually get advice from a dad, but this episode, we're getting some advice from Mama D.
Well, Mama D brought up, even in her question, which was going to be the beginning of my response, is, look how we're affected when we're younger and our parents are rooting on a sibling or giving extra attention to a sibling. And it's quite natural to maybe be a little envious of it, but to actually have it affect them to the point where they now are encouraging their children or her children. She's encouraging other people's children. She's encouraging everyone, where she's gone possibly to an extreme level of encouragement. And the interesting question is that if you give people unlimited encouragement, does that have benefit or extra benefit? Or does it in fact have harm? If you are playing sports or games or doing work in school and you congratulate them over something that is very minor achievement, is that a good thing? Well, as you know, your father's answer is going to be, no, I don't think so. I think that you have to encourage your children to pursue their dreams and make the effort, but you have to be realistic with the results. And if you let someone win, if you're playing a game of chess, as you know, okay, maybe once in a while. But otherwise, they get the wrong perspective. They think that they're better than they really are is not a good thing either. I think in the real world, you have to give expectations of what's achievable and what's not achievable, but the hard work has to be put in. The hard work's got to be put in order to be recognized where it makes sense. So when her son says to her, you know, Mom, I can't really trust your opinion because everything is roses and dandies and everything is great. No matter what I do, even if I slip and fall on my tuchus, you still find the positive in it and think it's great that at least I went outside and got some fresh air. But what was interesting is that her parents did support her endeavors when it came to really educating herself, really being able to stand on her own two feet and become somebody, and were willing to pursue at any cost. So the encouragement really was there for her to do well in school and to be the best that she can be. And obviously she's a very smart lady and has maybe misinterpreted the encouragement of her parents by seeing the she had a brother that was able to play varsity sports and where they were able to go to the ball games and cheer him on. And the truth of the matter is that when I played sports or I went to tournaments or even if I was just going to sing in the choir, the more people that show up, the more people that would push me and cheer me on, I actually would do better on the field of battle. But in the classroom, there's not too many cheerleaders there. And when you're taking a test, you're getting a very quiet room and there's nobody cheering. And if you are doing the preparation and you're doing the hard work and you can pass these tests and be an all-A student, well, that's just a magnificent achievement. And I'm sure that in her parents' way, they gave her acclamation for it, but certainly didn't cheer her on necessarily the same way that you cheer a son in a ball game, whether it's baseball or football or whatever the sports that he was playing or soccer. And what's interesting is that when it comes to her own children and her own sons, she's doing the same thing. She's going to all the ball games. She's cheering them on and doing exactly what her parents and her father did for their sons. So obviously she didn't think that was a bad thing. She just would have liked to have more encouragement. And when she had doubts in her abilities, she felt like the same type of enriched encouragement wasn't there. But maybe it was. I'm not sure. And the truth of the matter is that she did achieve what her parents wanted her to achieve. So that should be recognized, that she was, in fact, able to go all through schooling with the best of grades and where she was able to put in the work to really make something out of herself. And she also has the comfort of making a beautiful family life and has the background to say, hey, I can get started and do whatever endeavors I want to because I do have that education. I do have that example of encouragement that I saw in my household. And she wants to share on a little larger stage with everyone because she feels like that the encouragement is a necessary requirement for success as well. And I believe in that, but there's many ways of expressing it, and it doesn't have to be where you're just being rooted on when you get a strike at the bowling alley.
Thanks for listening. Now I think I'm going to go call my dad.
I'll say goodbye and see you the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Better Call Daddy show. Join us weekly for new episodes and more daddy wisdom.
Better Call Daddy is good advice always.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. You can also find special episodes on my YouTube channel, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, Alexa, or your preferred podcatcher. That's a wrap for now.